Pirates and Red Sox, like it's Pirates and Red Sox, like it's, I feel like our teams like regularly just have zero interaction.
Well, like the only interaction right now is on like the rumor market of us getting Jackie Bradley Jr., but that's it.
Ugh,
and
I
can tell you it's probably not happening.
You guys had a really small payroll last year. Do you think that they're going to pony up for JBJ? I mean, he's a Gold Glove center fielder.
Yeah, well, we definitely need a center fielder, but one thing about management, and any Pirates fan will tell you this, so I'm not the only Pirates fan that will tell you this, is our upper management just does not like throwing money into this team for some reason. Like, it's crazy because whenever I would be around Pittsburgh with my family and stuff, because I don't live there now, but I'd go to Pirates games back in the early part of the decade in the 2010s whenever they were actually winning, and it was sellout after sellout after sellout after sellout. And PNC Park is one of the most beautiful parks in all of baseball. And then it's like, Jackie Bradley Jr., especially with the way the market looks this year, I don't think he's going to be getting like $15 million from anybody. He's not going to be getting like double-digit figures from anyone, so why not throw your name out there? Like on my podcast the other day, I said even Jock Peterson, a guy like that, he'll garner some money, but why not throw the money at a guy that's going to solidify your center field spot for at least a year or two?
The free agent market, I just wrote about this for girlatthegame.com, talking about Marcus Stroman. You know, he accepted the Mets qualifying offer like an hour ago, and or he announced it an hour ago, and he's getting $18.9 million. But we're not here to talk about free agents. We are here to talk about managers. I thought it would be fun to break down the different dramatic managerial hirings that have happened in the last, you know, 10 days since the offseason began, because none of them affect your team in any way. They're all American League managerial hirings. But you also have some interesting thoughts on Tony La Russa. So maybe let's start with him.
Okay, so I know all the off-field issues. Obviously, I don't think he's making it out of this without getting fired personally. If he doesn't get fired, it's just really a big thing on I Watch First Take this morning on a kind of privilege deal, and I'm not going to really get into that. But I just don't see how apparently a day before they hired him, they knew about his DUI charge. They knew about all this stuff. But if you look this year at, and this is going to be an interesting thing that I've seen no one talk about, who is the NL coach of the year this year, or manager of the year this year? Don Mattingly. That dude is like, and I know he has to be at least be in his 60s, right? And the Miami Marlins, if I remember, most of their players are in their early 20s, maybe going right into their 30s. And everybody's like, Tony La Russa is not going to know how to, like, get to guys like Tim Anderson and Jose Abreu, those, like, kind of younger guys on their team. But I'm like, look at what Don Mattingly just did with a Marlins team that lost 105 games last year. Yeah, I know there was an extended playoffs. The season was a lot shorter and everything. But he got that team to the playoffs, and they won a series against Chicago, which I absolutely loved as a Pirates fan. But it's just like this dynamic of saying a guy who hasn't coached for a long time is going to come in and not be able to get to players is just kind of wild to me. And I would really look at that division now. The Indians might get rid of Lindor. The Royals and Tigers are just not even close right now. And then the Twins are just like off and on, even though they're one of the more consistent teams in baseball. I look at it and say, who's to say the White Sox don't win that division with La Russa as their manager if this all kind of gets fixed? Just after seeing what Don Mattingly did with a Marlins team that is way away in talent from the Chicago White Sox.
Yeah, it's just a big mess. And I mean, it makes it even worse, you know, the way that he talked to the police officer saying, you know, basically like, do you know who I am? You know, I'm big in baseball. I'm a baseball person, showing him his World Series ring. Like, what do you think the chances are that they keep him versus the chances that they fire him before or part ways with him before he even manages a game for them?
I'd say like there's like a probably like sadly like a 40-45% chance that they keep him. And it's like a really 50-50 kind of deal, because there's not really like, after obviously the guys we're going to talk about two that already got hired as well, there's not a lot of candidates really available now, I would say. Like, there's always candidates available, but La Russa has his track record, obviously, both good and bad. But are you taking the bad with the good in that situation over a guy that might not even be able to manage your club that well, especially when you've made it aware that you want to win. So sadly, I think he might stay, but the firing thing, if it doesn't happen before winter meetings, it's just not going to happen, I don't think, because I don't think you want to bring in a new manager in January or February right before spring training.
Yeah. I mean, look, the Red Sox and the Astros had to deal with this last winter, and so did the Mets. I mean, the Mets fired's not the right word. Everyone wants to call it something else, but the Mets parted ways with Beltran before he managed a single game. It would be kind of crazy if two off seasons in a row, a Major League Baseball team let go of a manager that they had only hired that year before they even managed a single game for the club. I don't think that Jerry Reinsdorf's going to do that. We already know that he overruled Rick Hahn in terms of the manager he actually wanted to hire. The White Sox were reportedly very interested in AJ Hinch, to the point where somebody put in our Locked On group DM that the White Sox social team had been playing around with making manager graphics for AJ Hinch and accidentally left part of the graphic on a Tony La Russa graphic that they ended up posting and then deleting. So, I mean, I don't know. I just think this, yeah, like you said, this isn't La Russa's first kind of issue that makes him a questionable candidate. I also think, I mean, just from a purely baseball standpoint, and I'm not, this doesn't excuse the DUI or any of his other, you know, kind of questionable sticking points, but it does kind of suck from a purely baseball standpoint that he would have finished his managerial career in 2011 as being a World Series champion manager, but instead now this will be, if he leaves, this will be the end of his, like, his managerial career will end with him being hired and fired from the White Sox for this. You know, you want to end your career like Ted Williams, like hitting a home run in your final at bat. You don't want to end your career like A-Rod, you know, being kind of pushed out of your last season when you're hitting like 113 or whatever, and the Yankees are just kind of like, can you stop playing early?
And we were talking about Stroman earlier, and I thought this was great that he said yesterday before he announced that he was signing his qualifying offer that no amount of money could, like, be paid to him for him to play for La Russa, which it's like, for a team that wants to win right now, if a guy like that in the free agent market is saying something like that, obviously other free agents are going to hear that too. Is that going to affect who they could get in the free agent market? More than likely, yeah.
That's what Trevor Bauer said. I mean, if you saw what he put on his – he made one of his videos yesterday after Stroman tweeted that, you know, no amount of money, like you said, no amount of money can take the place of peace of mind for him. That was what he said was his priority. Trevor Bauer kind of said he is of the mind that, you know, you should give people a chance and, you know, talk to them one-on-one, kind of get to hear their story, which I appreciate. But he did make the good point, and you're the similar point to what you're making right now, that, you know, if you have players who on the free agent market who say that they don't want to come to the White Sox now because they don't want to play for Tony La Russa, that's a problem for your franchise. Because if players, or even the players in the organization, I mean, when they announced his hiring last week, there were a lot of people floating around the, you know, tidbits from within the White Sox organization, people being unhappy that Jerry Reinsdorf made the executive decision to hire him. You know, some players reportedly weren't thrilled about his managerial style, thinking that it wasn't going to gel with, like, the very young atmosphere in Chicago. You know, so this was already kind of a hotly contested hiring before all of that, and now you add this stuff onto it. This is his second DUI. You know, you have the kneeling during the anthem thing. A lot of athletes don't like his comments about that. You have his age and his managerial style. There are a lot of things that would make free agents not want to come play for him, and that's going to be a problem. You have to have a manager that players want to play for, because, like, if your players don't want to play for your manager, your ship is sinking no matter how talented its passengers are.
Oh, yeah. And as a betting person, like, whenever, like, those over-unders on wins and everything come out, like, I know I said, like, if this all gets fixed, he'll definitely probably be in a lot better position. But if players legitimately don't want to play for him and the White Sox over-under is anywhere near, like, 80 or 90, I'm banging the under on that with, like, any amount of money that I can put on it. because we've seen it happen. Like whenever, like in any sport, if a team just doesn't want to play for a guy, like we look at the Atlanta Falcons right now. I know that's way out of there, but they fire Dan Quinn. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, 3-1. Like they actually want to play for this guy. Even I don't care if I'm getting paid any kind of money or what. It's just if I don't want to work or play for someone, I'm just not going to play to my full potential. Why is Tim Anderson going to go and try to get a MVP bid next year if he doesn't want to play for the guy that's telling him what to do 162 days out of the year?
Yeah, it's a huge problem. And especially because, you know, you can see it in the contrast with Marcus Drummond's decision today to accept the qualifying offer from the Mets. And he said that the key factor that kind of swayed his decision towards staying was Steve Cohen. And obviously Steve Cohen is the owner, not the manager. But Steve Cohen cleaned house as soon as he took over last week. The culture of the Mets has rapidly shifted. And Marcus Stroman saw that. And that's what made him accept the qualifying offer. And that's huge for baseball, to have a team owner who actually cares about their team, who actually loves the game of baseball, who is passionate and emphatic about making success happen for their franchise and the fan base. Marcus Stroman was like, I'm all in on this. Like, I want this. I'm staying. And he was open about it on social media. And I think that's great. And like, I hope that other teams see this and they're like, oh, damn, like maybe we should care about something other than money. Because you know what? You're going to make the money anyway. And you'll actually make more money if your fans are happy and your players are happy, because happy players are going to be more motivated to continue the success, because winning feels good. Winning's contagious. You know, nobody enjoys losing. And the same thing for fans. You know, fans at Fenway Park, for example, this season, if there had been fans in the stands at Fenway Park, I guarantee you there would not have been a lot of fans in the stands, because A, it's expensive, and B, because no one wants to pay hundreds of dollars to watch your team suck for like four hours at a time.
Oh, yeah. As a Pirates fan, I can't hold that.
Mets fans are so hyped, and I'm hyped for them. You know, I think that that's going to be an interesting thing for the White Sox if they proceed with Tony versus if they don't, because I think really the only person or people who were happy with the La Russa hiring were La Russa and the man who hired him.
Dude, there's a great quote from La Russa that he made at one point. I don't remember when he made this, but it's every year you start with the respect and trust at zero and you have to work every day to earn it. And I would say right now he has earned literally zero respect.
If anything, in the negative.
Yeah, he's in the negatives by a long shot.
But I don't think I even agree with that quote. I think that to an extent, I mean, no manager comes from like the middle of nowhere. You know, they come from either a different team or they come from being a coach on another team or they get promoted. You know, you don't just become a major league manager out of nowhere unless you're like that kid in that movie where his grandfather owns the Cubs, I think, and then the Twins, and his grandfather dies, leaves him the team, he makes himself manager. But other than that, very unrealistic situation. Players usually know who's coming in to lead them. And, you know, players around the league talk. They can look into guys. They can, you know, just even Google them. They can look at their records. They can look at old news clippings about them. There were already people, I think even before this part of the scandal happened, who were like, this is not the ideal situation. I think Tony La Russa was going to have to work out of a deficit of, you know, trust and leadership as it was. And this has only compounded it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, 100%.
I mean, I just can't picture him managing like Tim Anderson. Like that's just, or Lucas Giolito. Like I just cannot picture that. Like I can't envision that. It doesn't compute for me.
Yeah, it also doesn't help when the manager he fired was an AL Manager of the Year candidate either. But
when they congratulated him on Twitter and they were like, congratulations to Rick Renteria, period, or whatever, it was like such, you know, on The Office, like when Dwight makes Kelly the birthday dinner and it just says, it is your birthday, period. Like that was the energy that White Sox tweet had. It was so awkward.
Just like when the Raptors fired Dwayne Casey after he quite literally won Coach of the Year.
Yep. I mean, also awkward, Kevin Cash. I mean, this is slightly different. Obviously, he has his job. But Kevin Cash won Manager of the Year after the whole Blake Snell thing. And obviously, he won Manager of the Year because, you know, the awards are about the regular season, not the postseason. But it was just very funny because I remember thinking at the time when he took out Blake Snell from that World Series game, I was like, oh, man, he's probably going to win Manager of the Year after losing the World Series.
Yep.
And he did. So anyway, that's La Russa. let's kind of touch on Hinch and then Cora too, because with Hinch, the White Sox wanted Hinch. And I mean, I don't personally have a high opinion of him as a manager, but I still think that he, and honestly, most other people would have been better fits for the White Sox. What do you think of Hinch for the Tigers?
Well, he's already had things this roster. I mean, really their biggest thing right now, and it kind of is just like something I expected whenever he got the contract in the first place, is you're in a rebuilding phase and you can't get rid of that Miguel Cabrera contract at all. But I think they need to give him time. Like, obviously anybody needs time with a roster like that. Like, I don't follow the Tigers religiously or anything, but I can definitely tell based over the last couple seasons that they just haven't been that great. We all know Hinch, though. He's going to probably sit there and try to accelerate the rebuild a little bit. I don't know how quickly that can happen. I would still say they're probably like one of those 2 or 3 year away teams, but we all know baseball is a completely different thing. And in his presser, I think he said, on a game management level, I think the strength is that I'm not afraid to try anything. I don't really have one philosophy other than to try to manage to win. I don't bunt a ton. I don't intentionally walk unless the game dictates it. So he's a very aggressive guy. And I mean, the AL Central of all divisions is probably the best division to be in to accelerate a rebuild, I would think, because it's not exactly the strongest division in baseball. I'm not saying it's like not the strongest either, but he has some guys that he can work for. Matt Boyd, Nico Goodrum, he has some Candelero. He has some decent guys he can build around, but it's going to be a lot like Pittsburgh. He's just going to have to get his guys in there, just like former Red Sox manager Ben Cherington right now at Pittsburgh. He just has to get his guys in there first. So I wouldn't expect too much out of it over the first like 1 or 2 seasons, but then by year 3, I think that'll be his break year, or make or break year, to say, okay, you've been here for 3 years. Let's see what you can do.
I agree. I think that one of the things with social media now is, you know, we all expect instantaneous results. Like, you can Google something in 10 seconds. So why can't you get a championship team in the first season? My thing with Hinch is that the reason I don't really consider him to be a good manager is because he failed to lead his team. Like, he lost control of his players. He openly admitted that he knew about the cheating scheme, tried to get them to stop, and failed. To hear that, you kind of go, well, you just openly admitted you couldn't effectively control your own players. I mean, look, they're grown men, you know, all of them, the players and the manager, but either he didn't try very hard, so he didn't care about the cheating, or he did try and he still effectively couldn't curtail them. So either way, I'm kind of like, this is interesting. I was not of the group of people who were begging for Cora to come back to Boston. I'm still very hesitant about it. You know, it's like being in love and then getting cheated on. Like, you know, you still care about the person, but you're also extremely hurt and you don't trust them. I mean, that's like basically literally what happened with the Red Sox. So with Hinch, like, I would still, from a manager standpoint, in terms of like, Cora was so beloved by his players, you know, and they respected him and they viewed him as a mentor and they truly connected with him. You know, that aspect, you know, I don't know so much how much Hinch had that with his players, but I do know that Cora's players respected him and they followed his lead. They let him guide them. And Hinch's players basically turned up their noses at him. Whatever extent he tried and failed to get them to stop cheating, they devised a player-driven scheme under his nose, and then he couldn't stop them from doing it. So, I mean, to me, I'm like, well, that's not a leader. That's a figurehead.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, like, but we look on the young player development thing, too, with Hinch whenever he was in Houston. He did play a pretty decent part in what Houston still has right now in Correa, Altuve, and Alex Bregman. Like, I mean, if he can show that he can develop 3 guys who are still with an organization 4 or 5 years after the fact of them being developed, per se, that's a pretty good sign in terms of on-field product and baseball product. But then again, like you said, is he going to be able to do that again with players that might not be as good as Correa, Altuve, and Bregman, while also building a good culture again in Detroit? Because Detroit hasn't made the playoffs in 6 or 7 seasons. Like, you have to give those fans something, especially in Detroit right now. The Red Wings are terrible. The Lions are terrible. It's like, you got to give Detroit fans something to look forward to by 2021. Like 2021 should be a season where, yeah, maybe you win 70 games, but you're at least showing, okay, we have decent pitching and decent hitting coming in. I don't mind the hire by the Tigers, but I do think they could have went elsewhere. And it's kind of like how you are with the whole Alex Cora thing with the Red Sox, and we'll talk about that in a little bit too. But it's a little hesitant, I think, for Tigers fans to be happy about it, but we'll see where it goes. And I mean, we obviously know he was involved in the Astros cheating scandal too, and you know he's going to hear about that probably a million times over the next couple years. But I don't mind the hire. I think it's obviously a better one than La Russa, but that's like not exactly saying much. But I think he'll do fine as long as he doesn't do anything stupid again.
Yeah, I mean, so we can talk about Cora in a second. I think Hinch is an interesting hire. I think both of them are interesting hires just based on the fact that there are other candidates on the market who aren't fresh off a one-year suspension. And I mean, we could do an entire episode of a podcast where we talk about whether or not the punishment fit the crime, whether or not the right people were punished. You know, that's a whole different conversation. I'm of the belief that to an extent, people deserve a second chance.
Yeah.
I don't really know what to say to people who are like, well, you know, how dare they hire him? It's like, well, they were both suspended and now they're not suspended. So teams are allowed to hire them. Like they didn't do anything wrong from that standpoint. They followed the procedure. The Red Sox and Cora didn't have contact until after the World Series. And Cora, by his own admission during yesterday's reintroductory presser, said, I didn't even expect to hear from the Red Sox. I didn't even plan on getting back into baseball for the next like 2 years or so. But yeah, I understand people being like, I don't want a cheater leading my team. You know, I have feelings that echo that, definitely. But if you're criticizing teams for hiring them, well, they didn't technically do anything against the rules. They hired people who are no longer suspended and are eligible for employment in Major League Baseball. Does that mean that I think that they could have hired other qualified people, like any of Bochy's lieutenants from San Francisco or someone like Luis Urrieta, who interviewed for Cora's position both off seasons in a row now, and who is a great, young, popular guy who I think would make a great manager for a lot of young teams like the White Sox. You know, I think that there are other options that teams could have gone with to give people a chance. But I also think, you know, to an extent, these two men also deserve a chance. So I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But I mean, I think the biggest thing is with any new manager, you can't expect the world on a silver platter in the first season, especially when you should know the realities of the team that they're coming in to manage. A new manager coming in isn't going to magically make every pitcher in the Tigers organization into a Cy Young. That's always the biggest issue, is like you're acting like these are miracle workers who can just wave a wand and suddenly they're completely different players. Like, no, I mean, a good manager can bring out the best in their players, but they can't fundamentally change like the physical skill of a player. You know, they can't turn some rando into the next Jacob DeGrom. That's not how that works. You know, you have to manage your expectations for managers.
Are Red Sox fans considering Cora a first-year manager again?
Well, you know, that's a really interesting question. So I think in a lot of ways, he is a first-year manager again. For one thing, he's coming into this situation not hot off the heels of winning a World Series championship, but hot off the heels of a one-year suspension for being involved in two cheating investigations. So very different entrance for him. But also the situation that he's coming into is different in so many ways. For starters, he has a new GM to work with. I mean, Chaim Bloom goes by chief baseball officer, but I mean, he's the new Dombrowski. And I mean, yeah, we talk about the Tigers. I mean, Dave Dombrowski demolished the Tigers and then he demolished the Red Sox. Luckily, the Red Sox happened to get a championship out of it. The Tigers were not so lucky. That's kind of his thing. He comes in, spends a bunch of money, decimates your farm system, and then leaves. Cora is going to have to work with a new kind of GM. Chaim Bloom is a lot younger. He's like this Ivy League guy who comes from the Rays. You know, he worked his way up from being an intern. He's, you know, comes from the analytics, low budget world of Tampa. Chaim Bloom is a very different guy from Dave Dombrowski. From my observations of Cora and Dombrowski, they had a good relationship, but it didn't seem like a particularly collaborative relationship in terms of, you know, Dombrowski would kind of be like, all right, here's your new pitcher. And then Cora is just supposed to like work with the players that he has. And you saw that even more in 2019 than you did in 2018, because Dombrowski was not allowed to spend any money in 2019. That's why the Red Sox did nothing at the 2019 trade deadline, like literally nothing. So they didn't really acquire anyone in the offseason leading into the 2019 season. You know, Cora just kind of had to make it work as like every single one of his pitchers not named Eduardo Rodriguez got hurt. You know, they just had to keep bringing up random arms from AAA to supplement the rotation. But Cora was working with what Dombrowski gave him or did not give him. And that's all he could do. Bloom has been very adamant about saying he wants a partnership with his field manager. He wants a true working collaborative relationship where they really work together to build a better team, a consistent team, not a team that wins a championship and then is in full rebuild mode 2 years later, which is currently the situation for this team. And that's been the situation. Three of their last four managers won a World Series championship in their first season managing the club. Terry Francona in 04, John Farrell in 2013, and Cora in 2018. And Tito also won in 2007. The only exception was Bobby Valentine, who had a terrible year in 2012, and that was his only year, thank God. The problem was they couldn't replicate that in a consistent manner. They would go from winning a World Series to being cellar dwellers within 2 years and then back again. And what the Red Sox claim to want is consistency, which would be lovely. I would really, like for my own physical health, I would love to have consistency in the Red Sox because then I won't have the blood pressure of an 80-year-old man who's eaten cheeseburgers every day of his life.
Very true.
Of course, the biggest difference, obviously, is Cora came into a very solid team. Like, he inherited a mass of riches. Dombrowski had set him up for success in 2018. He came into a team where they had won the division 2 years in a row already. They went to the ALDS in 2016 and 2017. Of course, they got booted out after the first round, but they were AL East division champs 2 years in running going into that year. And the only thing that they were missing really between 2017 and 2018 was a big bat to replace David Ortiz. Mm-hmm. And they got that with JD Martinez. And all of a sudden, you're off to the races. Now, Cora's coming into, like, I don't even know how to compare it here. He's walking into, like, the apocalypse decimated Red Sox clubhouse. This is when we're going to see what Cora can actually do.
Yeah.
Because it's all well and good when you come into a team that already has a bunch of all-stars, a bunch of veteran superstar pitchers. Now, Cora's coming into basically the complete polar opposite of that situation. So now we're going to see, like, okay, well, what can he do with the scraps that remain?
It's very interesting, too, just because of the idea that the Red Sox quite literally went from the upper echelon of baseball to now the Rays were in the World Series, the Yankees were in the playoffs, the Baltimore Orioles of all teams for a good amount of the season were actually competing.
Yep.
The Toronto Blue Jays have money and can go spend that money if they choose to, which I don't think they will really that much, but I really hope that Boston, for their sake, doesn't do this and, like, do it. But if he has a bad year in 2021, I really hope they don't do that one-year thing. We all know, too, that you guys need pitching, but who has a really big link right now to Alex Cora is Francisco Lindor. Is Xander Bogaerts' Francisco Lindor middle infield absolutely disgusting?
Oh, yeah. And also, DJ LeMahieu apparently is of interest to the Red Sox right now. Cora has a two-year contract for 2021 and 2022 with a club option for the next two seasons. I think they would give him more than 1 year just because they know that they're giving him a really bad team to work with. And that even though Chaim Bloom is obviously going to have to acquire a lot of, you know, pitching and some other pieces this winter, you know, they're not going to get Chris Sale back from Tommy John until at least June, probably more like July. And this is, of course, if we're going off of the assumption that we're having a normal MLB schedule next year starting in March, which we don't even know if we will. But point being, Bloom has said, you know, you're not going to see Sale until, you know, July. And with Eduardo Rodriguez, nobody knows. He had myocarditis. There's no timetables for a viral heart infection in baseball. You know, there was a football player in college who died from this. So with Erod, they're going to be as careful as possible. They're not going to push him at all. And I mean, I think that fans really have to temper their expectations with Eddie, because in addition to the fact that he's coming back from an inflammation of the heart muscles. He also, from a baseball standpoint, has not thrown a baseball since July. And that was a very quick, short-lived, you know, he threw one bullpen and they were like, nope, something's wrong. By the time the season rolls around, it'll be over a year since he will have, you know, actually pitched, like, for real. He currently only is allowed to be doing very light, you know, activity. Like, he got cleared last month to start slowly walking on a treadmill with a very light incline. That's not a kind of guy where you're like, yeah, he's going to go from slowly walking on a treadmill in October to pitching six innings in June. Like, that's not going to happen. I don't know. I feel like this coming season will be better than last season. You know, you have to hope. I mean, it was so hard to watch. But, you know, the same thing with, like, the La Russa hiring. Some free agents might not want to play for Cora. They might not want to play for Hinch. I mean, look what Marcus Stroman said. You know, peace of mind is more important to me than money. You know, obviously, the situations with La Russa versus Hinch and Cora are very different. But I'm sure that there are going to be some players in free agency who are like, I don't want to go to the Red Sox. Because in addition to the fact that they might not want to play for Cora, they know that the Red Sox traded away Mookie Betts, and that's just, like, embarrassing for them at this point. They're probably not going to keep Jackie Bradley Jr. And they tried to get Martin Perez to take a 56% pay cut. He was the only starting pitcher on the Red Sox this year who was consistently healthy for the entire season. He was the only pitcher who threw over 60 innings, so he's the only one that could have qualified for the ERA title. He was the only one who made more than 10 starts. And their reward for him was they asked him to take a 56% pay cut instead of picking up his option. And then they declined to pick up his option. Players around the league are going to hear these things. And they're like, why would I want to go to a team that has a cheater for a manager and repeatedly tries to screw over their players? It's more than just Cora. It's the culture in Boston right now that is not welcoming to players. I feel like our teams, like, regularly just have zero interaction.
Well, like, the only interaction right now is on, like, the rumor market of us getting Jackie Bradley Jr., but that's it. Ugh, and I can tell you it's probably not happening.
You guys had a really small payroll last year. Do you think that they're going to pony up for JBJ? I mean, he's a Gold Glove center fielder.
Yeah, well, we definitely need a center fielder, but one thing about management, and any Pirates fan will tell you this, so I'm not the only Pirates fan that will tell you this, is our upper management just does not like throwing money into this team for some reason. Like, it's crazy because whenever I would be around Pittsburgh with my family and stuff, because I don't live there now, but I'd go to Pirates games back in the early part of the decade in the 2010s whenever they were actually winning, and it was sellout after sellout after sellout after sellout. And PNC Park is one of the most beautiful parks in all of baseball. And then it's like, Jackie Bradley Jr., especially with the way the market looks this year, I don't think he's going to be getting, like, $15 million from anybody. He's not going to be getting, like, double-digit figures from anyone, so why not throw your name out there? Like, on my podcast the other day, I said even Jock Peterson, a guy like that, he'll garner some money, but why not throw the money at a guy that's going to solidify your center field spot for at least a year or two?
The free agent market, I just wrote about this for girlatthegame.com, talking about Marcus Stroman. You know, he accepted the Mets qualifying offer like an hour ago, and or he announced it an hour ago, and he's getting $18.9 million. But we're not here to talk about free agents. We are here to talk about managers. I thought it would be fun to break down the different dramatic managerial hirings that have happened in the last, you know, 10 days since the offseason began, because none of them affect your team in any way. They're all American League managerial hirings. But you also have some interesting thoughts on Tony La Russa. So maybe let's start with him.
Okay, so I know all the off-field issues. Obviously, I don't think he's making it out of this without getting fired personally. If he doesn't get fired, it's just really a big thing on I Watch First Take this morning on a kind of privilege deal. And I'm not going to really get into that. But I just don't see how apparently a day before they hired him, they knew about his DUI charge. They knew about all this stuff. But if you look this year at, and this is going to be an interesting thing that I've seen no one talk about, who is the NL coach of the year this year, or manager of the year this year? Don Mattingly. That dude is like, and yep. I know he has to be at least be in his 60s, right? And the Miami Marlins, if I remember, most of their players are in their early 20s, maybe going right into their 30s. And everybody's like, Tony La Russa's not going to know how to, like, get two guys like Tim Anderson and Jose Abreu, those, like, kind of younger guys on their team. But I'm like, look at what Don Mattingly just did with a Marlins team that lost 105 games last year. Yeah, I know there was an extended playoffs. The season was a lot shorter and everything. But he got that team to the playoffs, and they won a series against Chicago, which I absolutely loved as a Pirates fan. But it's just like this dynamic of saying a guy who hasn't coached for a long time is going to come in and not be able to get to players is just kind of wild to me. And I would really, you look at that division now, the Indians might get rid of Lindor. The Royals and Tigers are just not even close right now. And then the Twins are just like off and on, even though they're one of the more consistent teams in baseball. I look at it and say, who's to say the White Sox don't win that division with La Russa as their manager if this all kind of gets fixed? Just after seeing what Don Mattingly did with a Marlins team that is way away in talent from the Chicago White Sox.
Yeah, it's just a big mess. And I mean, it makes it even worse, you know, the way that he talked to the police officer saying, you know, basically like, do you know who I am? You know, I'm big in baseball. I'm a baseball person, showing him his World Series ring. Like, what do you think the chances are that they keep him versus the chances that they fire him before or part ways with him before he even manages a game for them?
I'd say like there's like a probably like sadly like a 40-45% chance that they keep him. And it's like a really 50-50 kind of deal, because there's not really like, after obviously the guys we're going to talk about two that already got hired as well, there's not a lot of candidates really available now. I would say like there's always candidates available, but La Russa has his track record, obviously both good and bad, but are you taking the bad with the good in that situation over a guy that might not even be able to manage your club that well, especially when you've made it aware that you want to win? So sadly, I think he might stay, but the firing thing, if it doesn't happen before winter meetings, it's just not going to happen, I don't think, because I don't think you want to bring in a new manager in January or February right before spring training.
Yeah. I mean, look, the Red Sox and the Astros had to deal with this last winter. And so did the Mets. I mean, the Mets fired's not the right word. Everyone wants to call it something else. But the Mets parted ways with Beltran before he managed a single game. It would be kind of crazy if two off seasons in a row, a Major League Baseball team let go of a manager that they had only hired that year before they even managed a single game for the club. I don't think that Jerry Reinsdorf's going to do that. We already know that he overruled Rick Hahn in terms of the manager he actually wanted to hire. The White Sox were reportedly very interested in AJ Hinch, to the point where somebody put in our Locked On group DM that the White Sox social team had been playing around with making manager graphics for AJ Hinch and accidentally left part of the graphic on a Tony La Russa graphic that they ended up posting and then deleting. So, I mean, I don't know. I just think this, yeah, like you said, this isn't La Russa's first kind of issue that makes him a questionable candidate. I also think, I mean, just from a purely baseball standpoint, and I'm not, this doesn't excuse the DUI or any of his other, you know, kind of questionable sticking points, but it does kind of suck from a purely baseball standpoint that he would have finished his managerial career in 2011 as being a World Series champion manager, but instead now this will be, if he leaves, this will be the end of his, like, his managerial career will end with him being hired and fired from the White Sox for this. You know, you want to end your career like Ted Williams, like hitting a home run in your final at bat. You don't want to end your career like A-Rod, you know, being kind of pushed out of your last season when you're hitting like 113 or whatever, and the Yankees are just kind of like, can you stop playing early?
And we were talking about Stroman earlier, and I thought this was great that he said yesterday before he announced that he was signing his qualifying offer that no amount of money could like be paid to him for him to play for La Russa, which it's like, for a team that wants to win right now, if a guy like that in the free agent market is saying something like that, obviously other free agents are going to hear that too. Is that going to affect who they could get in the free agent market? More than likely, yeah.
That's what Trevor Bauer said. I mean, if you saw what he put on his – he made one of his videos yesterday after Stroman tweeted that, you know, no amount of money, like you said, no amount of money can take the place of peace of mind for him. That was what he said was his priority. Trevor Bauer kind of said he is of the mind that, you know, you should give people a chance and, you know, talk to them one-on-one, kind of get to hear their story, which I appreciate. But he did make the good point, and you're the similar point to what you're making right now, that, you know, if you have players who on the free agent market who say that they don't want to come to the White Sox now because they don't want to play for Tony La Russa, that's a problem for your franchise. Because if players, or even the players in the organization, I mean, when they announced his hiring last week, there were a lot of people floating around the, you know, tidbits from within the White Sox organization, people being unhappy that Jerry Reinsdorf made the executive decision to hire him. You know, some players reportedly weren't thrilled about his managerial style, thinking that it wasn't going to gel with like the very young atmosphere in Chicago. You know, so this was already kind of a hotly contested hiring before all of that. And now you add this stuff onto it. This is his second DUI. You know, you have the kneeling during the anthem thing. A lot of athletes don't like his comments about that. You have his age and his managerial style. There are a lot of things that would make free agents not want to come play for him. And that's going to be a problem. You have to have a manager that players want to play for, because like, if your players don't want to play for your manager, your ship is sinking no matter how talented its passengers are.
Oh, yeah. And as a betting person, like whenever like those over-unders on wins and everything come out, like I know I said, like if this all gets fixed, he'll definitely probably be in a lot better position. But if players legitimately don't want to play for him and the White Sox over-under is anywhere near like 80 or 90, I'm banging the under on that with like any amount of money that I can put on it. Cause we've seen it happen. Like whenever, like in any sport, if a team just doesn't want to play for a guy, like we look at the Atlanta Falcons right now. I know that's way out of there, but they fire Dan Quinn. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden 3-1. Like they actually want to play for this guy. Even I don't care if I'm getting paid any kind of money or what. It's just, if I don't want to work or play for someone, I'm just not going to play to my full potential. Why is Tim Anderson going to go and try to get a MVP bid next year if he doesn't want to play for the guy that's telling him what to do 162 days out of the year?
Yeah, it's a huge problem. And especially because, you know, you can see it in the contrast with Marcus Stroman's decision today to accept the qualifying offer from the Mets. And he said that the key factor that kind of swayed his decision towards staying was Steve Cohen. And obviously Steve Cohen is the owner, not the manager. But Steve Cohen cleaned house as soon as he took over last week. The culture of the Mets has rapidly shifted. And Marcus Stroman saw that. And that's what made him accept the qualifying offer. And that's huge for baseball, to have a team owner who actually cares about their team, who actually loves the game of baseball, who is passionate and emphatic about making success happen for their franchise and the fan base. Marcus Stroman was like, I'm all in on this. Like, I want this. I'm staying. And he was open about it on social media. And I think that's great. And like, I hope that other teams see this and they're like, oh, damn, like maybe we should care about something other than money. Because you know what? You're going to make the money anyway. And you'll actually make more money if your fans are happy and your players are happy. Because happy players are going to be more motivated to continue the success, because winning feels good. Winning's contagious. You know, nobody enjoys losing. And the same thing for fans. You know, fans at Fenway Park, for example, this season, if there had been fans in the stands at Fenway Park, I guarantee you there would not have been a lot of fans in the stands, because A, it's expensive, and B, because no one wants to pay hundreds of dollars to watch your team suck for like four hours at a time.
Oh, yeah. As a Pirates fan, I don't know about that.
Mets fans are so hyped, and I'm hyped for them. You know, I think that that's going to be an interesting thing for the White Sox if they proceed with Tony versus if they don't, because I think really the only person or people who were happy with the La Russa hiring were La Russa and the man who hired him.
Dude, there's a great quote from La Russa that he made at one point. I don't remember when he made this, but it's every year you start with the respect and trust at zero and you have to work every day to earn it. And I would say right now he has earned literally zero respect.
If anything, he's in the negative.
Yeah, he's in the negatives by a long shot.
But I mean, I don't think I even agree with that quote. I think that to an extent, I mean, no manager comes from like the middle of nowhere. You know, they come from either a different team or they come from being a coach on another team or they get promoted. You know, you don't just become a major league manager out of nowhere unless you're like that kid in that movie where his grandfather owns the Cubs, I think, and then he, or the Twins, and he, his grandfather dies, leaves him the team, he makes himself manager. But other than that, very unrealistic situation, players usually know who's coming in to lead them. And, you know, players around the league talk. They can look into guys. They can, you know, just even Google them. They can look at their records. They can look at old news clippings about them. There were already people, I think even before this part of the scandal happened, who were like, this is not the ideal situation. I think Tony La Russa was going to have to work out of a deficit of, you know, trust and leadership as it was. And this has only compounded it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, 100%.
I mean, I just can't picture him managing like Tim Anderson, like that's just, or Lucas Giolito. Like, I just cannot picture that. Like, I can't envision that. it doesn't compute for me.
Yeah, it also doesn't help when the manager he fired was an AL Manager of the Year candidate either. But
when they congratulated him on Twitter and they were like, congratulations to Rick Renteria, period, or whatever, it was like such, you know, on The Office, like when Dwight makes Kelly the birthday dinner and it just says, it is your birthday, period. Like, that was the energy that White Sox tweet had. It was so awkward.
Just like when the Raptors fired Dwayne Casey after he quite literally won Coach of the Year.
Yep. I mean, also awkward, Kevin Cash. I mean, this is slightly different. Obviously, he has his job. But Kevin Cash won Manager of the Year after the whole Blake Snell thing. And obviously, he won Manager of the Year because, you know, the awards are about the regular season, not the postseason. But it was just very funny because I remember thinking at the time when he took out Blake Snell from that World Series game, I was like, oh, man, he's probably going to win Manager of the Year after losing the World Series.
Yep.
And he did. So anyway, that's La Russa. Let's kind of touch on Hinch and then Cora too, because with Hinch, the White Sox wanted Hinch. And I mean, I don't personally have a high opinion of him as a manager, but I still think that he, and honestly, most other people would have been better fits for the White Sox. What do you think of Hinch for the Tigers?
Well, he's already had things this roster. I mean, really their biggest thing right now, and it kind of is just like something I expected whenever he got the contract in the first place, is you're in a rebuilding phase and you can't get rid of that Miguel Cabrera contract at all. But I think they need to give him time. Like, obviously anybody needs time with a roster like that. Like, I don't follow the Tigers religiously or anything, but I can definitely tell based over the last couple seasons that they just haven't been that great. We all know Hinch, though. He's going to probably sit there and try to accelerate the rebuild a little bit. I don't know how quickly that can happen. I would still say they're probably like one of those 2 or 3 year away teams, but we all know baseball is a completely different thing. And in his presser, I think he said, on a game management level, I think the strength is that I'm not afraid to try anything. I don't really have one philosophy other than to try to manage to win. I don't bunt a ton. I don't intentionally walk unless the game dictates it. So he's a very aggressive guy. And I mean, the AL Central of all divisions is probably the best division to be in to accelerate a rebuild, I would think, because it's not exactly the strongest division in baseball. I'm not saying it's like not the strongest either, but he has some guys that he can work for. Matt Boyd, Nico Goodrum, he has some Candelero. He has some decent guys he can build around, but it's going to be a lot like Pittsburgh. He's just going to have to get his guys in there, just like former Red Sox manager Ben Cherington right now at Pittsburgh. He just has to get his guys in there first. So I wouldn't expect too much out of it over the first like 1 or 2 seasons, but then by year 3, I think that'll be his break year, or make or break year, to say, okay, you've been here for 3 years. Let's see what you can do.
I agree. I think that one of the things with social media now is, you know, we all expect instantaneous results. Like, you can Google something in 10 seconds. So why can't you get a championship team in the first season? My thing with Hinch is that the reason I don't really consider him to be a good manager is because he failed to lead his team. Like, he lost control of his players. He openly admitted that he knew about the cheating scheme, tried to get them to stop, and failed. To hear that, you kind of go, well, you just openly admitted you couldn't effectively control your own players. I mean, look, they're grown men, you know, all of them, the players and the manager, but either he didn't try very hard, so he didn't care about the cheating, or he did try and he still effectively couldn't curtail them. So either way, I'm kind of like, this is interesting. I was not of the group of people who were begging for Cora to come back to Boston. I'm still very hesitant about it. You know, it's like being in love and then getting cheated on. Like, you know, you still care about the person, but you're also extremely hurt and you don't trust them. I mean, that's like basically literally what happened with the Red Sox. So with Hinch, like I would still, from a manager standpoint, in terms of like Cora was so beloved by his players, you know, and they respected him and they viewed him as a mentor and they truly connected with him. You know, that aspect, you know, I don't know so much how much Hinch had that with his players, but I do know that Cora's players respected him and they followed his lead. They let him guide them. And Hinch's players basically turned up their noses at him. Whatever extent he tried and failed to get them to stop cheating, they devised a player-driven scheme under his nose, and then he couldn't stop them from doing it. So, I mean, to me, I'm like, well, that's not a leader. That's a figurehead.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, like, but we look on the young player development thing, too, with Hinch whenever he was in Houston. He did play a pretty decent part in what Houston still has right now in Correa, Altuve, and Alex Bregman. Like, I mean, if he can show that he can develop three guys who are still with an organization 4 or 5 years after the fact of them being developed, per se, that's a pretty good sign in terms of on-field product and baseball product. But then again, like you said, is he going to be able to do that again with players that might not be as good as Correa, Altuve, and Bregman, while also building a good culture again in Detroit? Because Detroit hasn't made the playoffs in 6 or 7 seasons. Like, you have to give those fans something, especially in Detroit right now. The Red Wings are terrible. The Lions are terrible. It's like, you got to give Detroit fans something to look forward to by 2021. Like, 2021 should be a season where, yeah, maybe you win 70 games, but you're at least showing, okay, we have decent pitching and decent hitting coming in. I don't mind the hire by the Tigers, but I do think they could have went elsewhere. And it's kind of like how you are with the whole Alex Cora thing with the Red Sox, and we'll talk about that in a little bit too. But it's a little hesitant, I think, for Tigers fans to be happy about it, but we'll see where it goes. And I mean, we obviously know he was involved in the Astros cheating scandal too, and you know he's going to hear about that probably a million times over the next couple of years, but I don't mind the hire. I think it's obviously a better one than La Russa, but that's like not exactly saying much. But I think he'll do fine as long as he doesn't do anything stupid again.
Yeah, I mean, so we can talk about Cora in a second. I think Hinch is an interesting hire. I think both of them are interesting hires just based on the fact that there are other candidates on the market who aren't fresh off a 1-year suspension. And I mean, we could do an entire episode of a podcast where we talk about whether or not the punishment fit the crime, whether or not the right people were punished. You know, that's a whole different conversation. I'm of the belief that to an extent, people deserve a second chance.
Yeah.
I don't really know what to say to people who are like, well, you know, how dare they hire him? It's like, well, they were both suspended and now they're not suspended. So teams are allowed to hire them. Like, they didn't do anything wrong from that standpoint. They followed the procedure. The Red Sox and Cora didn't have contact until after the World Series. And Cora, by his own admission during yesterday's reintroductory presser, said, I didn't even expect to hear from the Red Sox. I didn't even plan on getting back into baseball for the next like 2 years or so. But yeah, I understand people being like, I don't want a cheater leading my team. You know, I have feelings that echo that, definitely. But if you're criticizing teams for hiring them, well, they didn't technically do anything against the rules. They hired people who are no longer suspended and are eligible for employment in Major League Baseball. Does that mean that I think that they could have hired other qualified people, like any of Bochy's lieutenants from San Francisco, or someone like Luis Urrieta, who interviewed for Cora's position both off seasons in a row now, and who is a great, young, popular guy who I think would make a great manager for a lot of young teams like the White Sox. You know, I think that there are other options that teams could have gone with to give people a chance. But I also think, you know, to an extent, these two men also deserve a chance. So I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But I mean, I think the biggest thing is with any new manager, you can't expect the world on a silver platter in the first season, especially when you should know the realities of the team that they're coming in to manage. a new manager coming in isn't going to magically make every pitcher in the Tigers organization into a Cy Young. That's always the biggest issue, is like, you're acting like these are miracle workers who can just wave a wand and suddenly they're completely different players. Like, no, I mean, a good manager can bring out the best in their players, but they can't fundamentally change like the physical skill of a player. You know, they can't turn some rando into the next Jacob DeGrom. That's not how that works. You know, you have to manage your expectations for managers.
Are Red Sox fans considering Cora a first-year manager again?
Well, you know, that's a really interesting question. So I think in a lot of ways, he is a first-year manager again. For one thing, he's coming into this situation not hot off the heels of winning a World Series championship, but hot off the heels of a one-year suspension for being involved in two cheating investigations. So very different entrance for him. But also the situation that he's coming into is different in so many ways. For starters, he has a new GM to work with. I mean, Chaim Bloom goes by chief baseball officer, but I mean, he's the new Dombrowski. And I mean, yeah. We talk about the Tigers. I mean, Dave Dombrowski demolished the Tigers and then he demolished the Red Sox. Luckily, the Red Sox happened to get a championship out of it. The Tigers were not so lucky. That's kind of his thing. He comes in, spends a bunch of money, decimates your farm system, and then leaves. Cora is going to have to work with a new kind of GM. Chaim Bloom is a lot younger. He's like this Ivy League guy who comes from the Rays. You know, he worked his way up from being an intern. He's, you know, comes from the analytics, low budget world of Tampa. Chaim Bloom is a very different guy from Dave Dombrowski. From my observations of Cora and Dombrowski, they had a good relationship, but it didn't seem like a particularly collaborative relationship in terms of, you know, Dombrowski would kind of be like, all right, here's your new pitcher. And then Cora is just supposed to like work with the players that he has. And you saw that even more in 2019 than you did in 2018, because Dombrowski was not allowed to spend any money in 2019. That's why the Red Sox did nothing at the 2019 trade deadline, like literally nothing. So they didn't really acquire anyone in the offseason leading into the 2019 season. You know, Cora just kind of had to make it work as like every single one of his pitchers not named Eduardo Rodriguez got hurt. You know, they just had to keep bringing up random arms from AAA to supplement the rotation. But Cora was working with what Dombrowski gave him or did not give him. And that's all he could do. Bloom has been very adamant about saying he wants a partnership with his field manager. He wants a true working collaborative relationship where they really work together to build a better team, a consistent team, not a team that wins a championship and then is in full rebuild mode 2 years later, which is currently the situation for this team. And that's been the situation. Three of their last four managers won a World Series championship in their first season managing the club. Terry Francona in 04, John Farrell in 2013, and Cora in 2018. And Tito also won in 2007. The only exception was Bobby Valentine, who had a terrible year in 2012, and that was his only year, thank God. The problem was they couldn't replicate that in a consistent manner. They would go from winning a World Series to being cellar dwellers within 2 years and then back again. And what the Red Sox claim to want is consistency, which would be lovely. I would really, like for my own physical health, I would love to have consistency in the Red Sox, because then I won't have the blood pressure of an 80-year-old man who's eaten cheeseburgers every day of his life.
Very true.
Of course, the biggest difference, obviously, is Cora came into a very solid team. Like, he inherited a mass of riches. Dombrowski had set him up for success in 2018. He came into a team where they had won the division 2 years in a row already. They went to the ALDS in 2016 and 2017. Of course, they got booted out after the first round, but they were AL East division champs 2 years in running going into that year. And the only thing that they were missing really between 2017 and 2018 was a big bat to replace David Ortiz. Mm-hmm. And they got that with JD Martinez. And all of a sudden you're off to the races. Now Cora's coming into like, I don't even know how to compare it here. He's walking into like the apocalypse decimated Red Sox clubhouse. This is when we're going to see what Cora can actually do.
Yeah.
Because it's all well and good when you come into a team that already has a bunch of all-stars, a bunch of veteran superstar pitchers. Now Cora is coming into basically the complete polar opposite of that situation. So now we're going to see like, okay, well, what can he do with the scraps that remain?
it's very interesting too, just because of the idea that the Red Sox quite literally went from the upper echelon of baseball to now the Rays were in the World Series, the Yankees were in the playoffs, the Baltimore Orioles of all teams for a good amount of the season were actually competing. Yep. The Toronto Blue Jays have money and can go spend that money if they choose to, which I don't think they will really that much, but I really hope that Boston, for their sake, doesn't do this and, like, do it. But if he has a bad year in 2021, I really hope they don't do that one-year thing. We all know, too, that you guys need pitching, but who has a really big link right now to Alex Cora is Francisco Lindor. Xander Bogaerts, Francisco Lindor, middle infield, absolutely disgusting.
Oh, yeah. And also, DJ LeMahieu apparently is of interest to the Red Sox right now. Cora has a two-year contract for 2021 and 2022 with a club option for the next two seasons. I think they would give him more than 1 year just because they know that they're giving him a really bad team to work with, and that even though Chaim Bloom is obviously going to have to acquire a lot of, you know, pitching and some other pieces this winter, you know, they're not going to get Chris Sale back from Tommy John until at least June, probably more like July. And this is, of course, if we're going off of the assumption that we're having a normal MLB schedule next year starting in March, which we don't even know if we will. But point being, Bloom has said, you know, you're not going to see Sale until, you know, July. And with Eduardo Rodriguez, nobody knows. He had myocarditis. There's no timetables for a viral heart infection in baseball. You know, there was a football player in college who died from this. So with E-Rod, they're going to be as careful as possible. They're not going to push him at all. And I mean, I think that fans really have to temper their expectations with Eddie, because in addition to the fact that he's coming back from an inflammation of the heart muscles, he also, from a baseball standpoint, has not thrown a baseball since July. And that was a very quick, short-lived, you know, he threw one bullpen and they were like, nope, something's wrong. By the time the season rolls around, it'll be over a year since he will have, you know, actually pitched, like, for real. He currently only is allowed to be doing very light, you know, activity. Like, he got cleared last month to start slowly walking on a treadmill with a very light incline. That's not a kind of guy where you're like, yeah, he's going to go from slowly walking on a treadmill in October to pitching six innings in June. Like, that's not going to happen. I don't know. I feel like this coming season will be better than last season. You know, you have to hope. I mean, it was so hard to watch. But, you know, the same thing with, like, the La Russa hiring. Some free agents might not want to play for Cora. They might not want to play for Hinch. I mean, look what Marcus Stroman said. You know, peace of mind is more important to me than money. You know, obviously, the situations with La Russa versus Hinch and Cora are very different. But I'm sure that there are going to be some players in free agency who are like, I don't want to go to the Red Sox. Because in addition to the fact that they might not want to play for Cora, they know that the Red Sox traded away Mookie Betts, and that's just, like, embarrassing for them at this point. They're probably not going to keep Jackie Bradley Jr. And they tried to get Martin Perez to take a 56% pay cut. He was the only starting pitcher on the Red Sox this year who was consistently healthy for the entire season. He was the only pitcher who threw over 60 innings, so he's the only one that could have qualified for the ERA title. He was the only one who made more than 10 starts. And their reward for him was they asked him to take a 56% pay cut instead of picking up his option. And then they declined to pick up his option. Players around the league are going to hear these things. And they're like, why would I want to go to a team that has a cheater for a manager and repeatedly tries to screw over their players? It's more than just Cora. It's the culture in Boston right now that is not welcoming to players.